Okay, I'm ready, AGP. Are we live? Good evening, everyone. Thank you. Thank you, AGP. Thank you, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday, February 13th meeting, 2024. And I'd like to ask the city clerk to establish a quorum so we can call the meeting to order, please.
Good evening. Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Barton.
Yes, I'm here.
Councilmember Edwards.
Yes.
Councilmember Ford.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Landrum.
Here.
And Mayor Wixom.
Hi, yes, and I'm zooming in on city business from Washington, D.C. Thank you, everyone. And Councilmember Edwards, can you lead us in the pledge of, moment of silence. I'm sorry. I'm off schedule. Take a moment. Thank you. Thank you. And Councilmember Edwards, if you can lead us in the flag salute, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Mr. Neumeier, I know we had no closed session. Is there anything you need to report out?
Nothing to report out, Mayor. Good evening. And also, I would suggest that Councilmember Landrum also, in compliance with the Brown Act, indicate that she's on city business, and that's why she's teleconferencing in like you did.
I am teleconferencing in from Washington, D.C. on city business.
Thank you very much. With that, we'll go to Mayor and Councilmember reports. Announcements and presentations, and I'm just going to lead off real quick, if you'll indulge me. Myself, Councilmember Landrum, and City Manager Kimball are in Washington, D.C. right now. We arrived yesterday afternoon, and we are here to attend the California Marine Affairs and Navigation Conference. This is a conference that discusses California ports and harbors. Today, we had meetings with Senator Butler's office. We had a great meeting with the Army Corps Engineers office in which we were able to talk about our dredge and our revetments and other things that we're looking for, hopefully funding from while we're here in Washington, D.C. And then this afternoon, we met with Director Elizabeth Klein, who is the director of BOEM, and had conversations with her about the offshore wind projects outside of Morro Bay. So many other things to come tomorrow. We begin the conference at 8:30 in the morning the next 2 days. And then tomorrow we'll have meetings with the Bureau of Reclamation and WIFIA, which will be in regards and reference to our wastewater treatment facility. And then we will also meet with our Congressman Carbajal. So with that, I will turn it over Vice Mayor Landrum, if you want to go next, and then we can let those live go.
Yes, I will just... I think you said it all, so I'll pass it on.
Thank you. Councilmember Barton?
I'm just going to let it go with your report. I thought it was all good things to hear. Thank you.
Councilmember Edwards, reports, updates?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I'd like to, first of all, apologize for my listening session. I did reschedule it. I got a lot of feedback on it's the Super Bowl day, so I actually wanted to watch that myself. Hello. So I want to apologize for that. I did move the neighborhood listening session for the beach track to be March 3rd from 1 to 3 p.m. at the same location, which is the studio, which is the room right off to, if you're facing the Kennedy Center, it's the room off to the left there. Again, from 1 to 3 p.m., the beach track. I also have scheduled my next one, which is a listening session on April 14th from 1 to 3 p.m. in the same location. This one will be for North Morro Bay again, but from San Jacinto to Highway 41. And I'll, again, be letting you know more about these. How you would find about how you would find out about it in RSVP is there will be flyers circulated around. I have point people in those different areas, and they'll be distributing those through social media and out to their neighbors as well via flyer. I'd also like to speak to a VSTRA subcommittee meeting that happened on February 8th. There is activity ramping up on this issue. The EIR report, we were let know that it's going to be back as soon as this next week, and that the review process will happen. Again, that's a 60-day review. It's important to remember that the EIR report is not an economic nor a safety report, so I just want to remind the public of that. And there will be more information on the safety and the economic reports to come at a later time. It's also, we were let know that VSTRA wants to engage with us again. I'm looking forward to this personally. And there are tentatively about three different public engagement opportunities that would be starting probably around early March. I do want to say on my behalf that I am hoping that that engagement with them is more of one that is relatable, that is easily digestible, that is inclusive, and that allows for our community to ask questions and express their concerns. And so I am hoping that the company, that VSTRA, hears that from me right now and hopefully from us. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Edwards, and being on that meeting with VSTRA, I would echo all those comments that you shared and the opportunity. And along with that, there is an opportunity that was shared with us and the possibility of a 15-day extension of the 60-day draft review too. So Councilmember Ford.
Thank you, Mayor. I have just a quick announcement that I did attend the Planning Commission meeting, the farewell to our former director, well, is he former? I think technically former now, Director Scott Graham. Bid farewell to him, but also listened in on a great meeting. There was a project, the Quonset Hut on Main Street, being turned into a hotel. So that is an exciting opportunity there. If you didn't get a chance to tune in, you can check out the agenda online and see what that project looks like. And I'll leave it at that for this evening. Thanks.
Thank you very much. City Manager Kimball.
Hey, thank you, Mayor. I have to unmute myself. I echo what Mayor and Vice Mayor stated earlier regarding the DC lobbying trip. And this year is my first year attending these meetings. And today was the first day, was very busy. And then I wanted to share that federal government folks are, I'm just envious of them, have so many staff on everything they do, where we only have a very limited personnel to do, we're expected to deliver full service where we have so little personnel. I just envious of their level of staffing. And I also wanted to add that because it's my first time that these trips are paid by a grant on this annual event. And I myself certainly feel very grateful to the grant opportunity. And I want to thank Harbor Department for putting in the paperwork to get the grant going so that we can attend these trips. With that, I think Chief Watkins, please, Chief Watkins, have a few things that would like to share with the public. Mayor, is that okay? I hand it over to Chief.
Thank you.
Thank you, City Manager Kimball. I just wanted to highlight and remind of a few things that we have going on. First of all, Chief McCrane and I will be holding our Camping Ordinance Community Forum for education and just answering any questions that anybody might have. And that's going to be on Monday, March 25th, I believe it is. So that'll be the 26th, and we have City Council on the 27th. So February 26th from 3 to 5. Did I completely confuse that? February 26th, it's a Monday. Sorry, I have all kinds of dates running through my head right now, and you'll understand why in another second. So, community forum opportunity to ask questions about our recent camping ordinance with Chief McCrane and I. That'll be held at the Morro Bay Community Center, also in the studio room, I believe is what we secured. And so I'd love to see anybody there who has questions, concerns, comments, ideas. We're certainly there to be accessible for something to discuss on this topic. So, and then the other thing I'd like to announce.
Chief, yes. What time did you say that was?
It's from 3 to 5.
Thank you.
And then the Morro Bay Police Department is accepting applications for our Citizens Academy. That'll begin March 7th, and it's 7 sessions, and will conclude March 28th. And that will exclude February 28th, because that's spring break, and people will probably be traveling then. So 7 sessions, so anybody who's interested in joining us and kind of getting a little more in-depth look at the police department and seeing why we do what we do and how we do what we do. It's a wonderful academy, and I encourage lots of people to apply and come join us and get a lot of questions answered. It's facilitated by our officers, and it's a wonderful opportunity for us to certainly reach out to our community and answer any questions that you have. And then finally, one thing I wanted to remind is the city of Morro Bay has one off-leash dog park. We had an incident where a city worker was actually bit by a dog that was off-leash at Cloisters just a few weeks ago. And I know for those of you who were here last year in January, we did have an enforcement campaign that we ran for about 30 days just to educate our community about keeping their dogs on leashes. It is a city ordinance and a requirement to have your dog on a leash unless you are at one of our off-leash dog park locations. And Del Mar Park is the only one in Morro Bay, but then obviously we also have El Choro Regional Park that has an off-leash dog park, as does our Morro Bay Dog Beach right at the north end of town there. So please remember to leash up your dogs because you never know what's going to spook them and create an issue. So that's all I have.
Anything else, City Manager? Thank you. I would thank you for that update, Chief Watkins. I want to also thank you. I was able to join you in the swearing in of 3 new officers the other day, which was very exciting for Morro Bay, having one new full-time officer and 2 reserves that come to the community with several years of experience. So thank you for that. That's very exciting news. With that, I'm going to move to public comment, and I'm going to turn this over to the city clerk, who will have your speaker slips and then call you up from there. Thank you.
I think Councilmember Ford is going to assist with this.
Yes, thank you, City Clerk Swanson. I'm going to go ahead and call you up. I have first up here Rachel Wilson, and then following her will be Ken Vestervelt. I'm not sure if you wanted to speak on consent or if you wanted to do it. Okay, so we'll hold off on you. So next will be Aaron Oaks. Welcome, Rachel.
Good evening, City Council. I sort of two-timed Morro Bay. I actually spent the last 3 weeks kayaking in Malaysia, Thailand, and Indonesia. And I went on to 9 different ports. I did a port tour. And when I headed off to Indonesia, I was really excited because I thought I would see a lot of wildlife. I would see a lot of animals in the ports. And unfortunately, I will report that I did not see any animals in the ports except for rats. Not one in 9 ports. And so anyway, when I was in Jakarta, I actually said, where are the animals that would be in these ports? I didn't see a bird. I didn't see anything. And they said, oh, we have SeaWorld if you want to see animals. So in order to see animals even diving below in the ports, there was nothing down there unless you got way away from the harbors, went to different islands. I did not see any birds. I did not see anything. And I asked why, and their response was, we have ships, chop, chop. roadkill. So another thing is I've heard that, and looking at some of the reports for operations and maintenance facility, that they're talking about ships that are about 300 feet long. In the port of Jakarta, I got to see a 300-foot ship. So here it is. This is 300 feet. 305 feet to be exact. And the next slide. Another view of a 305-foot long ship. The other thing is, when you bring these big ships into port, they just don't come in. They have to have electrical hookups. They have to have a way to pump out their bilge. They have to have water hookups if it's not a desalination plant. So they pump out all of their sewage, which is why when cruise ships get stuck out in the ocean, you hear about sewage backup, right? It's because they haven't been able to pump out their bilge. And then they have to have food and resupply chains that involve massive cranes. So operations and supply, if you think about our community, what do people come to Morro Bay to see? They come to see a rock, yes, but they come to see the otters. They come to see the birds. They come to see all of the wildlife. And when I was in Malaysia, Thailand, and Indonesia, the only place I saw wildlife were in the parks designed, the zoos designed for me to see wildlife. There was not one bird, there was not one animal, and I got told multiple times, chop, chop. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Oakes?
Good evening, members of council and staff. My name is Aaron Oakes of Morro Bay. So, 3 weeks ago, I reached out to the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce to work out a deal. And the deal involves this. I asked them to tell the truth. I've also asked them to rescind the non-disclosure agreements that prevented their board of directors from talking about a merger with the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce. I heard back from the chairperson, Cherise Hansen, who told me that the board would take it under advisement. That was 3 weeks ago, and I haven't heard back. I'm still interested in making the deal and making sure that the Morro Bay Chamber ushers in a new era of transparency and leadership in coming out to be a more independent entity. I'm concerned that if they do not do that within a reasonable amount of time, the city council should look at potentially reducing their funding for that organization until they are more transparent with their intentions going forward. What I wanted to talk about as well is that there about 10 days ago, there was a political opinion research survey that came out that seemed to be on the side of promoting the battery energy storage system. Vistra denied that they're involved. This is basically it was a push poll that was focused on targeting a grassroots organization, and I'm representing their shirt today. Citizens for Estero Bay Preservation, they named the organization. And phone calls that they've had with residents, they've isolated and marginalized and attacked private citizens, asking questions like, what do you think about this person? Did you know that this person did that? And making misleading, derogatory, and false comments. So this went out to thousands of residents in Morro Bay. And I think that around the time where residents are gathering their thoughts for an EIR for the BESS, I think this is highly inappropriate. And I would like the people who are behind this effort to come forward. Because the Citizens for Estero Bay Preservation, we're here. We're everywhere. You know, we're not hiding. But these people are. And just a few days ago, I learned that there was an organization formed to oppose this group. So where are they? I don't see them here. I would like to hear from them if they're behind this weird effort. And I would like the City Council to condemn this practice. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Oakes. Up next, we have Linda Winters, and following her, we will have Nicole Dorfman.
Good evening. Can you hear me okay? My name is Linda Winters, and to the mayor, I feel like I'm talking to the Wizard of Oz. To the council members and staff and the chiefs, there's a lot of people missing here tonight. I am officially, as of January 31st, a 30-year resident here in Morro Bay in the same mobile home park. And as of January 29th, I am also 76 years old. I celebrated my 76th birthday right here in this very room 2 weeks ago, and 65 to 70 people attended my birthday party, and we all ate our dinner together. It was Monday night dinner. It's a good way to have a party. So I must make some acknowledgments to City Clerk Dana Swanson, for giving me the 8-minute crash course lesson on how to get to the City Council agenda from the new format. It works like a charm. It's right here. Chief McCrane, and his crew handing out emergency evacuation information prior to the possible flooding in 2024 and instructing me how to use apply Genesis to my phone. That also worked like a charm, up to and including the tornado warning. Okay, could have done without that really well. To Public Works Director Greg Wallach, who doesn't happen to be here tonight, and your crews for making our section of Main Street ready as it possibly could be to handle the additional rains. You also have the very best folks in your maintenance crews, a never-ending and thankless job. And I would be remiss if I failed to mention our faithful and fearless police department. These are the folks that have the hardest of jobs. They have to answer every single call. They answered one earlier today right in front of my house. I won't go into any details, but I thank Chief Amy for all that you've done for those of us in mobile home parks here in Morro Bay. And last but not least, Mr. Scott Graham, who also is not here, leaving us very soon to go back to his origins in Pismo Beach. I wish you well. And I just recently met his replacement, Michael, and I won't massacre your last name. Scott, we had our differences of opinions throughout the years regarding mobile home park living, but that's okay. Good luck to you. And one more thing to everyone here in this room and beyond. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you, Ms. Winters. All right, next, Ms. Dorfman. And then following her, we have Seychelle.
I did submit a graphic, so I'm just waiting for that to come up. In the meanwhile, hello, Nicole Dorfman. It's a small room here today, but there we go. Okay. So thank you, everybody, for being here, all the work that you all do to keep Morro Bay running so smoothly. It's a pleasure to live here and raise my family here. And I am working to keep it that way. The main reason that my family loves being here, I have a family of surfers, and we love the ocean, and we love all the marine animals, just as Rachel was speaking about. And at this point, we're at a juncture where that could all be endangered. And so I'm here as a board member for REACT Alliance to let you all know we're having a big event here. It's called Save Our Seas, Stop Offshore Wind. The event will be on Saturday, March 9th, in this very room. It's going to be great. We have three bands you can see up there on the poster. We're going to have food trucks, a silent auction, speakers, a kids zone. It's all going to start off at noon, meeting here with a march down to the South T Pier, where we're going to be met with a flotilla. A bunch of fishermen and other people who like to be on the water will come and meet us, all speaking up for our oceans. And there's a whole lot that goes into offshore wind. There are so many components, as people who have dipped their toe into that understand. At React Alliance, we have created these postcards, which have a lot of information about wildlife impacts, community and economic impacts, and environmental impacts. There's QR codes, so you could link to our website, link to different media to learn more and educate yourself about how destructive this is going to be to our marine environment and to our coastal environment, to our small town, and also to our economy. So I urge you to attend. It's going to be a great time. And also, if anybody's interested, just let me know and I can give you some of our flyers. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, Council and Mayor. I'm Seychelle Can and I live here in Morro Bay. And I'm here to get some vision of who is REACH and what is our council's relationship with REACH. Like, you know, how many times do you meet? I know you announced last meeting that you had a meeting, but we didn't really get to hear what was discussed. So my interest is in the kind of translucency of REACH and how they kind of float around and influence people, but they're never really up front with us. So I would like to know if you have any scheduled meetings coming up, and how many have you had in the past, and what were those meetings about? Who can attend those meetings? Can it just the council or the public invited as well? Can we be noticed as the public for future meetings and what that agenda is? And can we have a summary of what was discussed? Because we feel like we're floating out here in the dark. And Citizens for Estero Bay in the future, and I know that you guys are very generous with your time, but we would very much like to meet with you and let you know what we are doing and what our concerns are personally. So we will meet with you in the future and have a request for that. I would also like to thank you for the extension of the EIR for the best plant coming up. Initially it was 45 days, now I hear it's 60 with a potential extension from that. So thank you for your efforts in that area, and we shall meet up soon. Have a very nice year. Happy Chinese New Year.
Thank you. All right, that concludes our public comment in person. Is there anyone in the queue? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, Ken, did you want to go ahead and go now? Okay, go for it.
Good evening, distinguished council, those who are here and those who are far. My name is Ken Vesterfeld, resident of Morro Bay, and I may have misled you, Councilman Ford, on what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the car show that's coming up. It is our 28th car show, vehicle car show here in Morro Bay, and we have vehicles that come from Canada, Nevada, Arizona, Tennessee, all over. To add to that, our car show this year is 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, 4th being the Saturday. The 2nd is when we have registration night for those who come. Out of the 540 vehicles, over half are in town on that Thursday night. Keep in mind, there's only about 15% of those 500 vehicles are from this county. So some are here for a whole week. It takes almost 100 volunteers to put this car show on. Nobody on the board gets paid. And the idea of the car show when it started was to bring business into town at this time of the year. It has accomplished that. A few years ago, we took a survey and kind of figured out roughly that it produced $35,000 to $40,000 in TOT and sales tax. So my little query is, for everybody working to bring business into town, and a lot of work for a lot of people, and raise that money, and for the businesses, we are handed a invoice from the city, roughly $4,000, saying, thank you for giving us the $35,000 to $40,000, but we're going to charge you for doing that. Sometimes it doesn't make sense to me. And so maybe sometime when you're visiting us tonight, I'm sorry, I got grandparent duty. I know I'm not look old enough to have grandkids, but I am. So if you might take in that consideration a little bit later on in your discussions, I truly would appreciate it. And please come on down. You'll see on that Saturday, there's over, all day long, there's probably over 10,000 people. We have photos to show you. And so it's a great event. Thank you very much. Have a good meeting. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vesterbelt. Anyone else in the audience? Welcome, Betty.
Good evening. My name is Betty Winholtz. I have three topics I'd like to cover in 3 minutes. The first one is the Scout Coffee on Morro Bay Boulevard. If you go down there during the middle of the week, you are overwhelmed with a burning smell. And I know that they probably have some kind of thing on there that's supposed to stop the smell from coming out, but it's not very effective or not completely effective. And it wafts up the boulevard. And so I'm wondering if something can be done about that, because I know that we've had barbecue places closed down because of their odors when they're not supposed to make odors come out and disturb the public. So I want you to know that that coffee thing is not being successful in controlling its smell. Along with that, I'm questioning, here is a business that's finally open after several years, and it's doing industrial work, like it's burning its, or what do you don't burn coffee, what do you roast it. You're roasting coffee, and they're actually baking in there as well for their other facilities. And yet we don't have a storefront open. And this is on our main retail street, along with Main Street, and yet there's no retail happening. It's just a closed industrial building that's not producing retail. And so I think that needs to be looked into. My second topic has to do with those of us who still have landlines got letters from AT&T saying that they were going to ask the CPUC to do away with their obligation to provide a service, that it would become, we could go to another provider, that they aren't going to be the backup for low-income people, and that we have a right to write in to the PUC and express our concerns. In anticipation that that may happen, they have so many wires strung around town, and they currently have wires that are already dead. Is there some way that the city can ask the PUC that if and when they allow them to do this act, that they have to take down the old wires? It would so improve our view of both the residents and the tourists. It's just a real blight. And so, one, I hope they don't do away with the service, but if they should, I think that they should have to remove the wires. And then my last topic is about tree trimming, and there's been a lot of it going on, and I think most of it occurred before our nesting season started February 1st. And I just want to remind the public that that is the deadline, that you're not supposed to trim or cut trees down from February 1st through June, because it is nesting season. We are a bird sanctuary, and it seems to me that quite a bit of the trees that were cut on public right-of-way now have made it difficult for the night herons to return.
Thank you, Betty. Anyone else in the audience?
When I first moved here and was going to high school, my friends and associates were undoubtedly members of the lower class and so-called undesirables. From the 16-year-old alcoholic to the kid that wanted to be 18 so he could go become a vagrant, willingly, by choice. And in college, my friends were retired bankers and wealthy property owners. I also began to work odd jobs for more wealthy members of our community. From Morro Bay to Los Osos to San Luis Obispo, I pet sat, house sat, landscaped and tiled. Sitting in someone else's hot tub, perched on a hill overlooking our town, I thought of all the people I've known and loved. Not a day goes by that I do not think of my cruelties and kindnesses, but taking such pleasure in what was to me ill-gotten helped to remind me of the prices we pay. For some to have so much of that which they desire, others must lose much of that which they require. The Tao says, when the court is arrayed in splendor, the fields are full of weeds, and the granaries are bare. Some wear gorgeous clothes, carry sharp swords, and indulge themselves with food and drink. They have more possessions than they can use. They are robber barons. This is certainly not the way of Tao. Now, I wonder, what have you got, and what is it you're willing to lose? As well, I would like to remind people that this is just about a week, a little short of a week, after the six-year anniversary of that nasty Nathaniel First Amendment incident. Just figured I'd remind people of that.
All right, thank you. Anyone else in the audience who would like to speak? All right, seeing that there are none, is there anyone in the queue, AGP?
There are currently no raised hands in the queue.
All right, thank you. We'll bring it back to you, Mayor.
Thank you. Thank you, Councilmember Ford. I appreciate that. Thank you, everyone, for the public comments. I will share with Seychelles. I will reach out to you and have a conversation with you about the city's position on REACH and our involvement with them. And Betty, I know that Mr. Qualick is on Zoom also this evening, and I'm sure he will be able to give us some information on the AT&T wires, hopefully an update maybe at the next meeting. I'm not sure that he would know right now. So with that, I will move to public comment for items on the consent agenda, items items 7A through 7E, and public comment.
This is Betty Winholtz again. I'd like to speak to 7B and 7C. 7B is regarding the city, lack for a better word, sponsored activities where we charge fees and not fees, one of which was related back by Mr. Vesterfeldt. I found it a little confusing in reading the report why there is a difference between something signature and not signature when neither of them have to have permits or otherwise. And it seems to me those categories could be combined into one. Just kind of a clarification, and I think that Mr. Vesterfeldt made a good point, and we'll look towards your discussion about that. Regarding item CC, which is 7C, which is about giving $25,000 to the project on 41 and Main, I want you to note, and I guess I'm asking for some financial information, that we've already given them $150,000 over a long-term loan. And so my question is, how long is that, and when do they start paying back? We also have given them $350,000 in a deferred permits. And again, when do they start paying those back? Because what we're offering, or what they're asking for in $25,000, is that they don't have to start paying that back for 55 years. Now, I'm going to guess everybody in this room will be dead by then. So just for some perspective, it seems to me that that term should be changed and that they should have to start paying sooner than that, like, you know, next year or whenever. And I think that would it may or may not fit with that $150,000 and $350,000. When do they start paying? So I don't want the city to get ripped off, I guess, is what I'm feeling, because we're offering them something. And in addition, one of the excuses for giving them the money, even though we've given them all this other, is that, well, we don't have any other projects in the queue right now. But if you give 25 out of $55,000, should someone come up in the next 55 years and want some money, we've got nothing to give them, you know, or I should say very little. So I'm concerned that we're offering more money for the same project and that the term is out way out in the future and that that needs to be reeled in. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Anyone else in the audience who would like to speak to the consent agenda?
Hello, sir. Yes, good evening, Mayor and City Council members, those here and those in DC representing our fine community. I'm Scott Collins, Executive Director for the Housing Authority of San Luis Obispo, and it's nice to be back. Thank you for making affordable housing one of your top priorities for the city. We appreciate your leadership on this challenging issue. Thank you for support of this 100% affordable housing project, Rockview at Sunset, which will provide 35 units to those who are of lower economic means in our community. Your generous support and partnership has made this project possible. We are excited to announce that folks will begin moving in at the end of this week. We're very excited about that. And totally understand, you know, people's concern that we've had this project look like it's been complete for a while. But just like a lot of other projects in our community, in the state, nationwide, and internationally, are struggling with supply chain issues. We've got snarled in that with the switchgear, which held us up significantly. We are very appreciative of the support of the city, as well as that of Assemblymember Don Addis and working with PG&E to help bring them to the project to complete inspections in January when they were looking at March or April later this year to do that, which would have meant 2 or 3 more months delay. So we really appreciate that support. However, that switchgear delay has created more financial impact for Haslow. Thus, we are seeking your support for the additional $25,000 in deferred loan. That, along with the aforementioned financial support that you provided, will be a huge help to this project, making it financially feasible and viable. Now, I can explain a little bit. I know I have probably like another minute left. Tax credits are how we and other affordable housing developers get things built in this nation. That's just how it works. And the way we compete to make that happen is a local match. If we don't have a local match, we don't even bother putting an application in. That's just how it works. And the city of Morro Bay went above and beyond by extending those loans at that rate of a 55-year payback. That's how it works. That's the system that we play in, and we're being very successful. We have this project, we have several other projects in our community across the county coming forward, and we couldn't do this without your support. And happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Good to have you back. Anyone else in the audience?
All right. Oh, it's kind of funny to me. I would mention the anniversary of the Nasty Nathaniel incident, and then lo and behold, there's Scott Collins. You guys going to have Alan or Gruich pop out of a box or something? Anyway, I'm very happy to see a conflict of interest code for our city. I spent a good time reading it. Gave me a bit of a headache. But I do have to say I understand well enough the intricacies of economics and personal relations. I'm a little bit concerned. I mean, I guess it really can't go as far as I'd like it to, but are you guys going to be disclosing, you know, economic conflicts of interest between close friends and family members? For example, I know there exist ties between the Chamber of Commerce and those sitting before me, or those absent as well. It's also my understanding that there are immediate family members of some of you that do business within the city. I'm not saying that you can't, you know, ignore that and try to be fair, but I would consider that a conflict of interest. As well, things like, I was looking at the Chamber of Commerce website, and lo and behold, there was a couple of city employees with their names like half a page above sponsorships from things like, oh, now I don't recall the name. I had it written down. Oh, well, the offshore wind project. As well, I was reading the memorandum of understanding and all that also gave me a headache. And I couldn't help but chuckle at all the discussion of market rates. I know this came up as well during discussion of, I believe it was the Libertine location. And these average market rates, you know, how much is a property worth? How much is a person's labor worth? And I think it's important to remember that just because the status quo demands inequality does not necessarily make it acceptable. I know many of our employees work way harder than their paychecks represent.
Thank you. Anyone else in the audience who wishes to speak to the consent calendar? All right, seeing that there are none, AGP, is there anyone in the queue?
Thank you, Councilmember Ford. There are currently no raised hands in the queue.
All right, thank you. I'll turn it over to you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. With that, we'll close the consent agenda public comment and bring it back to council. I have items 7A through E. Does anyone have any desire to pull any of those items? Seeing none, I will ask for a motion to approve.
I'll move that we approve items 7A through 7E.
Thank you. And a second?
A second.
And roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Edwards?
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
Councilmember Landrum?
Yes.
That was a yes,
I believe? Yeah, I couldn't hear you.
Thank Sorry. You. Okay. And Mayor Wixom?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Councilmember Ford, again, for your help with that. And with that, we will move on to business item 9A, and I will turn it over to Human Resource Manager, if she's there.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. Rachel Hendricks, Human Resources Manager. Tonight, I'm here to present to the council consideration of a conditional appointment of Michael Codron as Interim Community Development Director and a conditional approval of an employment agreement between the City of Morro Bay and Michael Codron. As you know, Scott Graham, the City's Community Development Director, is leaving the City of Morro Bay to serve as the Community Development Director for the City of Pismo Beach. The City has begun the recruitment process for a replacement. However, the process is expected to take a number of months. Scott Graham was gracious enough to find us an interim replacement. While the City conducts a recruitment for a permanent position, I'd like to introduce Michael Codron. Michael Codron earned a Master's of City and Regional Planning from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo and spent his career working several positions for the City of SLO. During his time with the City of San Luis Obispo, Mr. Codron held many roles, including Housing Programs Manager, Assistant City Manager, and lastly, Community Development Director. As a planner and then as a director, Michael worked on all manner of planning projects, including development agreements, general plan updates, and San Luis Obispo Downtown Concept Plan. Michael Codron is currently working as the Interim Community Development Director for the City of Pismo Beach until Scott Graham arrives there. So they'll be doing a switch. The contract details Michael Codron's hourly wage with no benefits as a retired CalPERS annuitant is not eligible for any benefits beyond the established salary range for the position. Staff asks that Council appoint Michael Codron as the Interim Community Development Director and authorize the City Manager to execute his employment contract. If approved, Michael Codron will start next Tuesday, February 20th. Michael is here in the audience, and I'd like to welcome him to the City of Morro Bay and let him speak a few words if he's interested.
Well, thank you, Ms. Hendricks. Mayor, members of the council, staff, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Really honored by your consideration. So you heard from Rachel that I've had a long career with the City of San Luis Obispo. But what I would like to share is that I've lived in Los Osos since 1999 and had the opportunity to really see change in Morro Bay and understand the community. So I feel like I am coming into a place where I may be starting from scratch in some ways, but definitely not in others. I have my wife and I have three children that all graduated from Morro Bay High, and we've just spent a long time in this community over the years, and so I'm excited to bring my experience here, working for the City of San Luis Obispo, most recently for City of Pismo Beach, to help the city handle the transition between community development directors, because I'm sure, you know, you want to maintain progress on projects and. Have support for your staff, and you have a great staff, so I'm really looking forward to working with them and keeping things going during the recruitment. So thank you very much.
Anything else, Rachel?
No, that's it.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Caldron. With that, I will bring it back to council. Any council questions for our human resource director or for Mr. Caldron? Seeing none, I will open public comment. And Council Member Ford, if you could please assist, I'd appreciate it.
No problem, Mayor. All right. Do we have anyone in the audience who wishes to speak to this item? All right. Terry Simons.
Thank you, Terry Simons. I'm personally gratified at the tremendous restraint that I've used so far in jumping up here. I'm only speaking because I've known Michael Caldron since he first started with the City of San Luis Obispo, and it seems like it was so long ago, but he still seems so young. I guess that's one of the advantages or disadvantages of being old like me. I think Michael is going to be a tremendous interim community development director, and I hope that if possible, he could become a permanent community development director, although he probably wants to live a quiet retirement in Los Osos. Anyway, I'm just thrilled that he's here. I have a lot of background with him, and I always knew from the moment I met him years ago that he was going to do well, and he certainly has. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Simons. Anyone else in the audience who wishes to speak? All right, seeing none. AGP, do we have anyone in the queue?
Thank you, Council Member Ford. There are currently no raised hands in the queue.
All right. Thank you. Bringing it back to you, Mayor.
Thank you very much, Council Member Ford. With that, I will close public comment on item 9A and go to council comments before a vote. And I would just like to, again, thank Human Resource Director Hendricks and also Mr. Caldron. We look forward to working with you and really appreciate you stepping in at a time that's going to be very important for our community as we start moving into the draft EIR with Vistra. It's a lot to take on, and so we really appreciate that you're going to be here with us. Comments from council? Seeing none, I will move forward.
No, Mayor, sorry. Yes. Wasn't quick enough. I just want to say I'm very grateful, Michael, that you are willing to step into this position for us. It's a very important position. All of the positions in our city are important. And when we have, you know, one person out, it really does make a huge difference on the load on everyone else in our staff. And so I appreciate that you will help fill that gap. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you bring to the city of Morro Bay. And I appreciate the fact that you have so much history here. My children also graduated from Morro Bay High School. And it really does ground you here. And you really I'm sure you completely understand our community, and so I really appreciate that. And I want to give a shout out to Scott Graham for bringing you to us and recommending you. So that's all I have to say. Thank you. Welcome.
I'd also like to thank Rachel and her team for taking care of this very swiftly on a recommendation by Mr. Graham. And so I really thank you guys, Mr. Caldron. I'm looking forward to working with you both in the Vistra subcommittee capacity, as well as the Downtown Design District committee that we have going on too. So I look forward to welcoming you with all of those people as well.
I'd also like to thank you for coming at this particular time to help us out, to bridge an important gap. I was so impressed with your resume of all the many, many different things you've done in city government, and I'm so glad that we will be able to benefit from that. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Council. Council Member Landrum, anything?
No, I think everyone said it all. I feel likewise. Welcome.
Thank you. With that, I will ask for a motion and a second, please, from Council.
I'll second that.
Well, I'll make that motion then.
Mayor, I'll go ahead. This is Council Member Edwards. I'll go ahead and make a motion.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Thank you. I get a roll.
Yeah, hold on. I recommend that Council appoint Michael Caudron as the interim community development director, contingent upon the successful completion of the city's background check. Additionally, it is recommended that the City Council authorize the city manager to execute the attached employment agreement following the successful background check.
Thank you. And that was seconded by Councilmember Landrum. And if I can have a roll call vote, please. Ms. Swanson?
Yes, of course. Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Edwards?
Yes.
Councilmember Ford?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Landrum?
Yes.
And Mayor Wixom?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you very much. And thank you again, Ms. Hendricks. Appreciate it. With that, we will move on to item 9B. And I believe Mr. Qualick will be zooming in. And I did see in the audience that our engineer is also there, Austin.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Wixom. And thank you, members of the council. Apologies, I won't be on camera today. I am a bit under the weather. But happy to join for this item. This is an item where staff is recommending that the City Council pass a resolution to adopt the local roadway safety plan. That is something that staff feels is an important step, one, in helping the city and the community understand options that we have to improve roadway safety, but also it puts the city in a good position to receive certain roadway safety grants that we would not be eligible to receive without adoption of such a plan. And I'll just, you know, add a couple of notes about how the plan was developed. We did do a public outreach process where we held two community meetings. We took it to PWAB as well. There was an online interactive tool that folks could go online and make comments about any area in the city. Excuse me. And really make comments about their observations or their suggestions. There was also an agency, regional agency group that included representatives from the police department and the fire department and SLOCOG and other agencies. And then finally, there was a very intensive study of crash data over the past 10 years that was done by our consultant, Kim Lee Horn. And so this plan is not a prescriptive document. It is not telling us necessarily what to do. It is analyzing the data, showing what the trends are, and then giving the city some options and suggestions for what it could do. But when it comes to actually writing the grant applications or creating the projects, we still have pretty free rein to do what we want. We don't necessarily have to use the suggestions that are in the plan. That said, it still is important for the city to adopt the plan if we do want to go for some of these grants in the future. And with that, that's just a kind of broad overview. I will give it over to Daryl DePensier. He is a representative from Kim Lee Horn, the consultant, and he'll have a short presentation for us.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you, Council. Pleasure to be here. So I just wanted to give a quick overview of what the local road safety plan is and why we've done it and what's in it a little bit for you guys. So the intention of the plan is really it's a data-driven look at your safety paradigm in the city. It's really based on what the federal government, the state government wants to see from local agencies to help improve the overall traffic safety. As you may or may not know, we have a traffic safety crisis emerging across the nation. Fatalities, serious injuries have been rising ever since COVID, essentially. People got used to really adopting some very bad driving habits at that point, and we haven't been seeing those habits improve as traffic's been increasing. So the good news is Morro Bay's trends are not quite reflective of those national trends. You have managed to see some declines in those injuries and fatalities, which is very good. That's not what we're seeing in the rest of the state. But that doesn't mean that we don't want to keep moving more and keep preventing them. So, and when we say it's data-driven, as Greg mentioned, we looked at all the crash data in the city. We analyzed every single intersection and every roadway segment that you have. We looked at the crash patterns. We looked at what kind of trends there were. what types of crashes were occurring, how severe they were, all of that. But we also listened to residents. We took a lot of input through those public meetings. We took input from our stakeholders and from through the website, and that was all part of the data we used as well. So we didn't just go off crashes. We understand that people experience things on the roadways and see things that you don't see in the crash data. So that was all part of the study as well. So one of the primary purposes for this is to ensure the city remains eligible for Highway Safety Improvement Program funding, Safe Streets and Roads for All funding. And then this plan also will help you a lot with your competitiveness for other grant programs such as ATP or some of the SB1 funding programs, anywhere where you can draw a nexus between your project and improving traffic safety. So this plan will really help with all of that. So the two big ones, obviously, Highway Safety Improvement Program, Safe Streets and Roads for All, but those other programs work as well. So in terms of the engagement, we got a lot of feedback, and I don't know if you've had a chance to look through the report document yet, but there is an appendix in there where we actually itemize all the different comments, and there's many of them. And you'll see a lot of those are reflected in some of the suggestions and improvements that come along as well. So we took a pretty broad look. We had the two physical meetings, and we had the online engagement. So part of what we have to do is identify emphasis areas. So it's not just about the roadways or the intersections where the crashes are occurring, but it's what are the behaviors, what are the conditions that are contributing most. That's really the core thing we're trying to get out of this study. So we had the six emphasis areas that came out from what we heard from people here and what we saw in the data. So number one, speeding. That always elevates the severity of crashes. It makes it more likely we're going to have injuries or fatalities, especially when it involves a bicycle or a pedestrian. So that's one of the emphasis areas that we want to focus on. Your speeds aren't very high compared to another city that might have highways running through the middle of it, but they are fairly high for the amount of pedestrian volume and bicycle volume you have. Cut through traffic, so you've got a lot of neighborhoods that don't necessarily need to be bearing the burden of some of those through routes, but when Morroway Boulevard gets busy, people just spread out and look for parking, whatever it is, and move on. So part of this plan includes some cut through traffic reduction or neighborhood traffic calming strategies that you could employ fairly broadly. And then drivers ignoring stop signs and signals, so people rolling through the stops, or you don't have a lot of signals, but even that we have seen that there's some people running that, and just making sure that we put more techniques in to make sure people are aware that the stop signs are there, give your officers more ability to enforce the rules when things aren't going so well. Lighting, it's another thing. Your city has some fairly dark streets, especially on the edges when you're going into the parks and things, so for people biking with very narrow shoulders and no lights, that can feel pretty uncomfortable. Pedestrians and bicyclists, you're a beach community. You've got a lot of people out on the Embarcadero, especially, and walking around, and they should be able to do that in comfort and safety without being afraid of vehicles roaring by. So, and just looking at the actual more patterns and where, so Morro Bay Boulevard, obviously, that's a high volume corridor. There's a lot going on there. That's your big shopping street. People are running across the street with cars, so we did see some interactions there. The Embarcadero is another area, obviously, where you've got a lot going on. But also Quintana Road, Main Street, and South Bay Boulevard, we saw a fair number of crashes in that. And there's some maps in the report that show you exactly where those are, particularly the ones with bicycle and pedestrians, or ones where higher severity levels were resulting from that. So in terms of the toolbox that was developed for this study, there's a pretty broad list. And as Greg mentioned, this isn't intended to be prescriptive. When we looked at the types of crashes that were occurring, we identified things that could help reduce those crashes. But you don't have to do all these things. These are just trying to get you in the right direction. And you can apply them anywhere these types of crashes are happening or where you have concerns for these issues. It's not supposed to be a project that has to be done here or there. So Morro Bay Boulevard, for example, it's a very wide boulevard. You've got more space than you need specifically for the traffic. You've got room for parking and other things. So I'm sure you've seen that in San Luis Obispo, the curb extensions. So near the intersections, you bring the sidewalk out a little bit so there's less distance pedestrians have to go across. It discourages people from driving in the parking areas to make turns, things like that. It also slows traffic down. High visibility crosswalks, so that's where you have those more piano key style crosswalks. They're a lot more visible. And people tend to slow down a little bit more when they see those because they have a bit more of a sense that there might be pedestrians there. And then the speed feedback signage, the ones that blink at you saying you're going too fast. Sometimes those are good to have and move around a little bit across the city so people don't get used to them, but they kind of get that cue that maybe they need to slow down a little bit. And then if you look at Embarcadero, there's some similar things there. Another one would be the rectangular flashing beacons. Again, you'll have seen those in San Luis Obispo. So you don't necessarily have a traffic signal there, but somebody can make the lights flash in the crosswalk so that cars know somebody's trying to cross. Raised crosswalks can be another option. So on a road like Embarcadero, speed bumps can be not necessarily a great solution because people speed up between them, but raised crosswalks are much broader. They're not as severe. They don't make as much noise, but they give the pedestrians a much more emphasized area to go, and people do have to slow down when they approach them. On Quintana Road, it's a bit higher speed there. So again, the speed feedback signage, raised pavement markers. So those are those little plastic domes you can put in the lines. So when people drive over them, they feel it and they stay in their lane a little bit better. And then where you have those curves, you could put some more advanced warning signage to help people get around them. Main Street, so that's one of your signals. You've seen those yellow stripes that you kind of put around them. Those actually have a surprisingly high effect. So they make them a lot more visible. People tend to obey the signal a little bit more readily when they see that. Looking at your yellow and red times, so making sure that there's enough time. Some of those bigger intersections, it takes a little bit longer for people to clear through them. So just giving that tiny bit of more yellow can help. And then again, those high visibility crosswalks, leading pedestrian interval, that's when the walk sign comes on a little bit before the light turns green, so the pedestrian gets to get into the crosswalk before people are starting to turn right, and that helps reduce the amount of times where somebody ends up hitting a pedestrian when they're trying to make that right turn really fast. And then on South Bay, rumble strips, so again, those are those little grooves that buzz when the car goes over to the edge of the road so they don't lose where they are. And then the advanced signage and flashing beacons, just so when the stop sign's coming up, people are prepared for it. We have another thing here. You don't have to read all of this. This is all in the report. But these are some of the traffic calming measures that you can take. So these are techniques to help keep people out of your residential neighborhoods and keep them on the major roads when you've got busier times. So it just can help you keep those neighborhood streets a little bit more for the residents and a little less spillover of the through traffic. And then here's a few of a little bit more of a look at some of the techniques we have. So striping, making your lanes feel more narrow. So when you have those big streets with a center line and you don't really have anything indicating where the edge, so you've got 20 feet to drive in, people are going to use that space. They're going to feel comfortable driving really fast. So if you stripe an edge line on it and make that lane a little bit narrower, you can have 12 or 11 feet, mark out where the parking is or bike lanes or anything like that. It gives the driver a bit more of a constrained feeling. They feel closer to opposing traffic. They're going to just naturally slow down. And that can actually allow you to lower the speed limit, too, when you do your next speed survey. The high visibility crosswalks, we've discussed that already. Some of the turning restrictions, that can actually be techniques with your neighborhood traffic calming. So you can put a sign up that says, no left turn during these time periods or things like that, just to help reduce the people going into the neighborhoods, and can give your law enforcement opportunities to enforce certain things that they can't right now without that. So basically, this is the end of the plan for next steps, the City Council adoption. Once you've adopted this plan, the plan would be in effect for 5 years, which means that you'll have full use of this for any grant applications that you move forward. After 5 years, you would need to update the plan and hopefully take it to the next level, because you'll have had some more experience implementing some of these countermeasures. You know which ones have worked really well locally, which ones maybe haven't been as effective as you'd hoped, and you can really pivot that and move it forward. So with that, happy to take any questions or answer any comments.
Thank you very much. Mr. Qualick, anything else to add to this before we bring it back to council?
Not at this time.
Thank you very much. With that, I will ask if there are any council questions to staff or the consultant.
Hi, Mayor. I do have one question. This is probably more for Mr. Qualick. During our goal setting, we had mentioned under public infrastructure, striping as being one of the things to take a look at. And I know that we're going to be doing a ranking in terms of our project priorities. And I'm just wondering, this just came to my head on this, since we identified a lot of inexpensive ways to help calm traffic as being actual striping. I just wanted to get your thought on that.
Thank you for the question, Councilmember Edwards. I think it's a good point. And as Daryl mentioned, there are some low cost methods to reduce speed, for example, on certain roads by making the width of the road less wide and more narrow. So, yeah, that is on our council goal list, and it is something we'll be looking at. Typically, we do striping as part of paving projects because it's just cost-effective to do it that way. But we have heard loud and clear that the city council would like to have just more regular striping done in general. And so that certainly will be something we'll be putting on our list. And we certainly will look at not only doing striping, but potentially doing striping as an implementation measure of this plan, which I believe we already have some budget for. And we can also look in the future at alternatives where we look for grant funds for striping. Even though striping is thought of as an inexpensive thing, if you're looking at doing it in multiple areas of the city, it becomes more and more expensive. So it for sure will be something we'll be looking at.
Thank you.
Anyone else for questions?
I don't have a question, but I do have a comment. I was very, very pleased to see the depth of the report and how much work went into that. Very helpful to be able to read it and realize, oh, we're behind the times on certain things, and other things are perhaps things that we haven't maintained well. So I just appreciate the depth of the work that went into the book. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilmember Barton. With that, I will.
Mayor.
Mayor.
So sorry, I have a question. I just really quick. Actually, I have two questions. The first question is looking at the table number 10, where it talks about traffic calming toolbox, and it lists items on dollar signs. It has $1 sign, $2 signs, $3 signs. I know that's of course variable over time, but I'm just curious. Is there kind of an idea of what jumps it to a $2 sign and what is a $3 sign? Like how much more money we're talking on average to qualify for that?
So they do vary a fair bit based on scale and quantity. There is a Caltrans maintains a cost book for all of these different items, and that's where we base our cost estimates on for whether it's medium. So the way I tend to advise people to look at those price stickers is more if it's like a $1 sign thing, that's usually something that's in the range that a city can kind of just go out and do. They don't have to do a lot of work. If it's $2 signs, you might want to consider a grant. If it's $3 signs, it's a major project that's probably going to need a full EIR and all that other kind of thing behind it. So it's going to be a longer term project to get together. So I don't necessarily want to give specific dollar amounts because they do vary, but that's the intention behind how we think about it.
Okay, thank you. And then my last question is the five-year mark. So I know that we were a little over the five-year mark. I was given a bit of a hard time by SLOCOG back in the day, some pressure to get this done, and I know that it takes a lot to get through the process and get to the point where we are right now. So my question is moving forward so that we don't get behind and we are consistent on our timing, should we start the process in 5 years, or do we need to start the process prior to 5 years and then so that we could be closer to that five-year mark? Like, what does the timeline look like for that?
So if you want to be really strategic about it, you want to have a new adoption before the first grant that you want to apply for after that five-year expires. So generally speaking, I would recommend that you get started probably a year before the five-year expiration, just so that you have it ready to go. But if it's a quieter grant season, like the HSIP, that's every 2 years. So I wouldn't say you have to be on by the month or something like that, but they will want to see a plan that's been adopted within the previous 5 years if they're using the same guidelines at that point, at that time.
Okay, thank you. That's it for me. More questions, thank you.
Thank you. With that, I will open public comment on item 9B.
This is Betty Winholtz. I want to say that I will make some comments that I made at Planning Commission when this came before them. I don't know that you got to see my comments, but so I'm going to review some of them here. First of all, I'm pleased that this is not prescriptive because I find many of the suggestions not fitting to Morro Bay. For example, a roundabout out at Yerba Buena and Main Street, or a ramp down Olive Street right above Tidelands. These are inappropriate projects that would cost probably millions of dollars and are not necessary. And I think that what I got mostly out of the plan is that we are a small town who rolls through stop signs, speeds, and goes through neighborhoods when there is something on Main Street that we need to get around. And I don't find those real objectionable. So for me, the study wasn't real valuable other than to confirm who we are. And I think there's a few corrections that need to be made before you adopt it. My guess is they won't, but I'm gonna point them out. One is on your page 18. It says that City Park is a bus hub, and it is not. It's a bus stop. We don't have multiple transportation there, and I think in this venue or this day, certain words have certain definitions, and it becomes critical that you use the right terminology. And I think it's important for us to recognize we are not a hub. Another one is on page 17 when we talk a bike box. It doesn't say what a bike box is. Now, maybe that's where you just go chain up your bike. I don't know, but that's not explained. On page 36, it talks about having an active transportation coordinator. I don't know that we need that. We're a small town. I don't know what that person would do. Maybe that's what Janine Burlingame already does. On page 38, it talks about a taxi service. I think if people want a taxi, they have to call in from out of town. We don't have a taxi service. So my sense was that this was kind of a generic report or a cookie cutter, and to some extent, it adapted some little things about Morro Bay, but mostly it's just a, you know, here's what every other city's doing. So I'm concerned about that. I do not like bulbs outs. I'll just throw that out. I didn't see a lot of patterns. We don't have, you know, I think they said that there were, and I'm going to say this wrong because it's been a while since I looked at the report, but it seems like there were less than 10 deaths in 10 years. So I think we're a pretty safe town, and not that we can't be conscious and start to improve on some other things, particularly striping. I think that's critical, particularly when we have such bad roads, that we need to be aware of that. So I'm just going to say, there it is.
Thank you, Betty. Anyone else in the audience who wishes to speak to this item? All right, seeing that there are none, AGP, is there anyone in the queue?
Thank you, Councilmember Ford. There are currently no raised hands in the queue.
All right, thank you. Back to you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. With that, I will close public comment on item 9B. And I'll ask Mr. Qualick if you have any responses to questions from the public comment at all.
Thank you, Mayor. I would just respond that from our standpoint, we call it a hub because it is a connection point between the RTA bus, the deviated fixed route, the school system's bus system. So in that sense, it is a hub.
Thank you. And does that have any bearing on the verbiage, have any bearing on pro or con of how we move forward with future requests based on that? Does it affect anything?
I'll defer to Mr. DePensier on that question.
And also, can you tell us what a bike box is, please?
Absolutely. So the terminology of bus stop versus bus hub is not going to have any impact on what you do moving forward. But the context of it being a hub where you have multiple things coming in, when there are grant programs that look at first last mile type funding, which is how do people connect from a transit service to their home or things like that, the hub is has a bit more weight to it, so you'll be able to apply for a few more things. What the bike box is, it's a little area you can paint out in an intersection, so it designates where if you're on a bike you wait at a signal, so that the bike is in front of traffic. So if when the green light goes, the bike doesn't immediately get run over by cars that are moving. So if you have enough bike traffic, it can be a useful technique and something very helpful for them.
Thank you, I appreciate that. Council, any more questions or we'll move into comments?
Yes, Mayor, I do. This is Council Member Edwards. You know, it is concerning hearing about after COVID, we are seeing a rise in people having bad habits or worse habits in terms of driving. And I guess my question would be, is there any sort of education opportunities, anything going on or being looked at out there, not only at county, but state and federal level at all for communities to utilize?
Yes, there's extensive things going on at the, especially the state level, but also the federal level. So this program is essentially one of those things, trying to have the cities look at their own individual safety conditions and what's going on. The Office of Traffic Safety at the statewide level is providing a lot of grants to cities to develop educational programs and for additional enforcement resources, things like that. There's also some legislation in this that's recently been passed at the statewide level. There's AB 43 or Assembly Bill 43, which is giving cities a bit more autonomy in setting speed limits. So historically, you can't just put a 25-mile-an-hour speed limit on a road. You have to do the speed survey. You have to go with the 85th percentile, or you can't enforce that speed limit. So AB 43 will allow you in certain cases, if there's a school or a park or your waterfront area, for example, you might have an extra 5 miles an hour. You can go below your speed survey and still have an enforceable speed limit. There's also some legislation coming to allow, there's piloting speed cameras again. That's been a difficult thing in the state for quite a while, and red light cameras. So depending on how those pilots go, there could be a rollout program allowing more of that. And then there's actually some discussions on treating how traffic citations are made in the state a little bit differently. So maybe reducing the impact of some of the more minor offenses, taking them out of the criminal system, which then can allow more of the camera type enforcement because you're not having quite as heavy an impact with the automated enforcement, but looking at more severe treatment of really reckless things, like when you're driving over 100 miles an hour, or you're driving really fast through residential neighborhoods, blowing through stop signs and red lights at speed, things like that. So trying to provide more tools for law enforcement to really target the more serious offenders.
Well, thank you for that. I'm really looking forward to hearing more about that. Also, I just kind of wanted to also make a comment for Mr. Qualick, everybody involved on this report, stakeholders. I want to thank all the community members that, you know, took part in this. There was, you know, truly a collaborative, collective report here, and I always love to see that. And it's also just Mr. Qualick seeing Eric Riddow on the report was bittersweet too. Shout out to him. I wish him all the luck at Caltrans.
Mayor, I have a comment. I want to echo what Councilmember Edwards just said. You know, very, very thankful for the Public Works team and everyone listed. When you look at the group here that is responsible for coming together to create this document, it's quite a hefty list. And then beyond that, there's pages and pages and pages of public comment from our community. And so it's one of those projects where I really truly felt that there was input from all different directions, and I just really am happy to see that it's finally come to an end and we can wrap this up and put a bow on it, because it's been a long journey. And I'm just grateful for all the hard work that went into it. And I hope that some grant opportunities do arise. And most importantly, I like to join in the journey for our county to get for the road to zero goal, zero deaths in our county due to, due to accidents. And so, and something that I did learn in the forum that I took for the Road to Zero forum hosted by SLOCOG a while back is that there really aren't any accidents because everything is preventable. And so, anyway, I'll just leave you with that, but that's my comments.
Thank you. Councilmember Landrum, comments?
I would just ask quickly, I guess, Mr. Qualick, in the case that a city didn't do the study within 5 years, is there any disadvantage to that as far as does it cost more to update it if you've waited longer, or, I'm just wondering, like, is it a good idea to keep doing the study even though you might be too busy and not be able to do the projects, or is it more advantageous to wait until you actually have something specific that you want done? It sounds like we don't really have anything like in particular in mind. So I was just wondering if there's some benefit to doing it every 5 years, no matter what. Am I being clear?
Yes, thank you for the question, Councilmember Landrum. And I think I understand your perspective. It's really a question of, do we want to do it every 5 years if it's not worth it? And so I think we'll take the next few years to see if we're actually successfully getting these grants and understand if, you know, we do want to do, and there's nothing that's going to require us to do this every 5 years. But if we want to continue using the plan as a mechanism to obtain grants, then yes, we would want to do an update. To your comment about we don't really have anything specific right now. So staff does have one project in mind that is high priority, and you know, you can certainly talk to the police chief, and she'll tell you that the crosswalk that goes across Morro Bay Boulevard near, I think it's not Kern, but she'll correct me if I'm wrong. But so the police department staff have to cross Morro Bay Boulevard to get from their parking lot to the police station. And at night, it's just sort of a low visibility area. There's a bit of a hill there, that there's a curve. And they don't feel safe crossing that road. And so this plan does help us identify some potential implementation solutions. And one of the goals of the plan, too, is that we don't necessarily have a patchwork system of elements that we put around the city, but that if we do something in one area, maybe we do it in a few areas so that our residents and visitors understand kind of how traffic works here. We don't want to have different installations in different areas, ideally. And so those are the sorts of things that we'll be looking at as we apply for grants for roadway safety. I hope that answered your question. I think I was really more answering it in the first part.
Yeah, no, it did. I just was just thinking if we're really loaded up with projects and we are adding things that we could do if we have input, we might not have time to do them if that should be considered when spending the money to do the study in things like that. That's all. Yeah. I was just, yeah.
Yes, I appreciate that consideration, because ultimately it falls on Public Works to do all of this stuff. And if we don't have the time to do it, then why are we doing it? And then, yes, that will be a topic of a March or April City Council meeting when we talk about the capital the prioritization.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think I'm just going to share that I big thank you to the community members who have participated, sent in the letters. Some of the things that I'm taking away from just the comments tonight from the consultant is, and from Mr. Qualick is, you know, that there will certainly be a welcome from the community for traffic calming strategies in the neighborhoods. That's something that I've heard loud and clear, and I think we've heard at the workshops from our community, as well as the lighting. Those seem to really be great concerns with that in our residential neighborhoods. Coincidentally, Pete Rogers, who is the director of SLOCOG, is here in Washington, D.C. also right now, and lobbying for money for our safety for our roads. So I see this as an opportunity, if SLOCOG receives funding, that Morro Bay can continue to apply for grants through that funding. And I would hope that as we talk about doing our paving project that's coming up and trying to do as much as possible so they're not restaging every time, because obviously it's more cost effective to have it done in larger groups, that the striping and some of these calming opportunities and things that have been identified can be incorporated while we're doing that paving, starting, I believe, in June, or that's the hopes. So I see those as, this is all kind of a package that should help us try and get some things done and move forward. So I appreciate it. And if there is nothing else, I will ask
Mayor, may I make a comment?
Yes, please.
I promised to make in the beginning, and I think it was Council Member Edwards that reminded me that just a huge shout out to Mr. Riddio. Today was his second day at Caltrans. He's sending us pictures of the orange trucks, but he this was really his baby, and he put so much time and effort into this. And so I told him he had to listen tonight. So thank you, Eric. And the other comment is we did get a very late comment on the report from Rick. And I think many of you know Rick. And it did not make it into the report that was presented in the council packet because it came later. But we will be including it in the final packet. And so I just asked that that the motion include the addition of that comment from that individual.
Thank you. I think all correspondence will be included if, unless the city clerk would tell us something different, regardless of whether it made it into tonight's packet. And yes, huge shout out to Erica. We miss you already, but wish you well at Caltrans. We'll listen for you on the local radio. With that, looking for a motion, please.
Mayor, I'd like to move that we adopt resolution number 14-24, acknowledging adoption of the plan and a goal of working towards zero traffic fatalities so the city may apply and potentially qualify for various roadway safety grant programs and to ensure that we have all comments included in that document from the public.
I'd like to second that.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. And if I may have a roll call vote, please.
Council Member Barton?
Yes.
Council Member Edwards?
Yes.
Council Member Ford?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Landrum? Yes. I'm sorry, we didn't hear you.
They can't hear you, Zora. Yes. Thank you.
And Mayor Wixom?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you very much. With that, we will move on to council declaration of future agenda items. Anyone? And City Manager Kimball, anything else since we're not there tonight? No, thank you. With that, I'd like to thank the council for helping facilitate the meeting. And thank you very much to our city clerk, Dana Swanson, for your help on our end, and AGP for helping us all get onto Zoom. With that, we are adjourned, and our next regular meeting will be February 27th. Thank you so much. We look forward to being home in a few days. It's very cold here.